Take a shackle, any shackle, and we'll say a holy, holy bracha, raise some holy spark, raise up the physicality. Everybody have a shackle of sorts. Lag Bomer is Bechinas Chanukah. Anybody know why Lag Bomer is Bechinas Chanukah? It's on the level of Chanukah. What do Lag Bomer and Chanukah have?
Fire.
Ah, I like that. Yes. Fire and probably the only two holidays that happen in Eretz Yisrael. Lag BaOmer was when Rosh Hashanah teaches that it's when the Torah Tanistar was revealed, and of course the only place where the hidden Torah can be revealed is in Eretz Yisrael. And Chanukah, of course, happened in Eretz Yisrael. Sukkot was on the way to Eretz Yisrael. It's pretty good.
What's Shavuos?
Shavuos is, we don't even know where it is. No one even knows why we celebrate Shavuos. I mean, we got the Torah on Har Sinai, but Shavuos...
It's not in Israel.
It's probably not in Israel. Depends who you ask. Okay, ready for Hanukkah?
Really? You say it was in Israel?
What? It depends how you define the borders.
Oh, it's so
definitely
1967 borders.
Good point.
1967 borders?
No, in the biblical, in the original borders, it's really, really, really vast. Okay, ready? Baruch Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam So before we start, I promised Max a good story. You guys actually were, a lot of you were there to witness half of this story. So everyone knows that, yeah, some of it. Everyone knows that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a student of Rabbi Akiva, student of Rabbi Nachum Ish Gamzu, and all three of them, mamish stressed the concept that everything's for the best. Hakol l'tova, Gamzu l'tova, and to chain Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Akiva, Nachum Ish Gamzu all talk about this concept that everything in life happens for a reason. It may seem not so good, but it's for our fixing. Now, sometimes we see it, sometimes we don't. But when we do see it, we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this Friday night, I was at the Kaitzel. Some of you guys had a schus to chill with, to hug. And my wife told me I have two guests that I'm allowed to pick up from the Kotel. That was how much space we had in our meal. Gewalt. So, on my way down to the Kotel, I love picking up random dudes. It's like my favorite. Okay, so I davened to Kadosh Baruch Hu in my mincha that I shouldn't have too much anxiety trying to find the right guest, because sometimes I get really stressed, like I'm in my davening, we're trying to focus on davening and like dancing with birthright groups, but then I gotta find the right guys and it's like hard, anxious. So I davened Hashem. So I found the right group, amazing group, dancing with them, and boom, I look behind me, there are two guys, prime targets, do my thing. I ask them if they wanna join, they say yes, boom, Kadosh Baruch Hu answers my prayers, awesome. So I tell them, okay, meet me up here in a half hour, say no problem, go, I can continue davening with birthright, whatever. And I look behind me, and they're gone. And then I did a little circle. I think I saw you guys, and maybe I looked a little rushed. I'm looking for them. Did another circle, and it seems they bounced, which is not the first time. They probably saw me davening, thought I was nuts, bounced. So I'm a little disappointed because, you know, I had all my hopes up to, you know, show these people a Shabbos experience, really excited. And now I'm kind of sad. So I say, Hashem, please send me the right people. So on my third round, I see these two dudes. One with a kippah, the white kippah, the kotel kippah. So I say, hey, you guys in for Shabbos meal? And they say, no, no, we're part of a big group. I'm sorry. I say, oh, no problem. I do another circle. I'm about to give up. I'm almost at Yeish. And I'm like, you guys see those dudes over there? They're going to come to my meal. And I really was looking forward. And I was like, you sure you guys don't want to come for a meal? And they look at each other like, well, I guess. I'm like, what are you guys doing after the meal? I'm like, well, nothing really. So I was like, so come. I'm like, well, our group leader is like, I'll convince your group leader. Don't worry. So I go to their group leader. And I'm like, I thought they were a birthright group. And but he's like, oh, well, I guess they can go. But there were three other people there, like, overheard the conversation, a few boys, a few girls. And they looked like they also wanted to get in. I was like, I can't take more than two. Absolutely not. But I can take you guys to my roof and just check it out. I'm like, great. So I'm like, awesome. This is working out better than I planned. I got my two guests. Thank you, God. Now I have six guests. I walk up to my house. We schmooze. It's great. We go to my roof, we dance, we tell them some stories. And then what happened? Our guests were 45 minutes late. So my wife's getting all nervous. And we happen to have some some buddies of mine who are really into Kiruv and stuff like that. So they go to my wife and say, yeah, just let them stay. But I wouldn't do it, but they can do it. So my wife's like, well, the guests aren't here anyway. I guess we have space. Fine, you guys can all join. So everybody joins. 2 minutes later, the guests come. So you can't say no now. So in the end, I got six guests instead of two. It looked like it was bad, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me threefold blessings, and we all had a great time. And it was interesting. They were preachers. They were learning to be Christian preachers. One of them kept Shabbos on Saturday. An interesting sect of Christianity. Point is, you never know HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you keep pushing. Sometimes it looks dark. It looks all down. But you keep pushing, Hashem makes it more blessing than you ever could have imagined. Bezrat Hashem. So, okay, last time we talked about Shomer Negiah, a few sources left. We're going to bless them. Last time, basically, we talked about all the halachic history behind the halacha of not touching women before they're married. Okay, we left off talking about handshakes. Is handshake considered derech chiba? Is handshake not considered derech chiba? And let's just read quickly Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's in source 12 on page 3. Anyone wants to look in? Read it. Davar halicha b'subway. Somebody asked Rav Moshe about going on the subway. You see the word subway? Subway. Uve bus. And on a bus. When people are going to work, right? New Yorkers know that when you're going to work, what's going to happen if during, you know, traffic time? You're going to rub up against someone. You're going to end up touching a female. So the question is, can I go on that bus or train, you know, during that time when it's almost guaranteed I'm going to touch a woman? Is that a problem? Show me. Yeah. People are pushing each other. Okay. So says Rav Moshe, is it a problem to go on the subway at this time?
No.
No, why not? Only Derech Taiva and Chiba would be a problem. Therefore, getting back to our shaking hands with a woman situation, would it be permitted to shake hands with a woman?
Of course.
Let's see. Shus Igris Moshe Chalak Aleph. Loshit Yad Leishak Derech Notnim Shalom Hibak Sham Pashut Shasur. So here, Rav Moshe says it's Aser. Interestingly enough, it's Pashut to him that it's Aser. Because they're Nidot. Because they're considered Nidot. B'davar, but look in the next source. B'davar Shariyat Shiyesh Mekilim Af Meriu Hashem Liten Liad Lisha Shimushita Ulai Sovrim De'in Zer Derech Chiba B'Taiva Aval Maisa Kasha L'Smach Hazeh. So all of you are in shock. But what we just said is only if it's Derech Taiva. So Rav Moshe mentions that. He says, it seems like it's not Derech Chiba and Taiva, but Lemaisa, it's hard to rely upon this. Why is Rav Moshe having such a hard time relying upon this leniency? Yeah.
Because there's a right to touch Nidas, and that's not...
But wouldn't that also be true in the subway case?
I would imagine that in the subway case, more of an onus situation. That like you have to go on the subway, you have to go take the bus.
Right.
Meaning that like you're going to be coming into contact with people when it comes to like shaking a woman's hand who's a Nida.
You don't have.
Even if it's not Derech Chiba or Derech Tava, there's like, obviously there's the surf, but it still stands. You don't necessarily have to shake her hand.
Right. Nachon. Very good. Agreed. Yeah.
Is this the way you said they're not Jews and non-Jews don't have...
Although in New York, I don't know if you could assume that most.
True, 10%.
But you're right. It could be in business meetings. It's also non-Jews. It's not clear that we're talking about a Jewish context. It could be. I would guess that there is a difference between being forced into a situation and actively opening your hand to someone. I would also guess there's a difference in terms of affection. Like, it is possible to have an affectionate moment when you're shaking someone's hand. It is possible for a person to even get stimulated by that. And therefore, Moshe found it hard to be matir in that situation as opposed to the subway situation. Okay? With that said, there are other poskim. Like we mentioned, Rav Henkin has an article on this issue, and he does permit shaking hands. And there are other poskim also say, for the reason we gave earlier, which is that it's not generally derech chiba, it may also depend on the individual. If you yourself know that there is some feeling stimulated in that handshake, that may be different than if you know that it's absolutely meaningless. Right. Again, it comes down to where we draw the line, and different poskim draw the line at different places. Rav Henkin does mention some wacky gemaras, some interesting gemaras where there are tzaddikim who raise like the akala on their shoulders and say, she's like goose to me. That's a gemara in Brachos. So there does seem to be a subjective element even regarding Nida, but the Ritva and almost all the poskim Achronim and Poskim write that we don't generally rely upon those gemaras. Those are exceptional situations for exceptional rabbis, not for you and me to take the law into our own hands. But I have to notice, for the sake of honesty, there are gemaras where there does seem to be an element of subjectivity on this issue. Okay, moving on to the question of to which family members does this apply and to which not. Okay, so let's look at the Rambam. I think we may have seen. Did we see the Rambam last time on this? I'm not sure. The Rambam is the original source, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam source 15 regarding which relatives are included in the Indian of Negiya. If you're kissing and you're hugging someone who is sexually forbidden to you, but you have no desire for them, okay? Kigon achoto hagdola, like your big sister. V'achot aviv, or your aunt, v'kiyotzebehem, afapish, ain lo shuma na'akal, even though you have no pleasure from this, harezim miguna bioter. What does miguna bioter mean? It's disgraceful, like genai. Where is he getting this from? He's quoting the exact lashon of the Rambam. Okay, the Rambam, living in Muslim lands, thought it was miguna to hug your sister or hug your aunt. V'davar isruhu masa tipshim, and it's like a davar isru, and it's a maisa of stupid people. She'en krovim la'aros klal, bing dola bing tana chutz me'av le'bitah u'me'em le'vina. The only one who that's outright permitted is a father to a daughter and a mother to a son, says the Shulchan Aruch. I think a grandma would also be included. But an aunt and a sister, the Shulchan Aruch is machmir like the Rambam. He is not happy. However, notice, he didn't say it's usur. He says, "Gnai v'davar isurhu," which is not exactly usur, but davar isurhu, although it's very close. Umaisa tipshin. Why do you need to say maisa tipshin if it's usur, right? And therefore, there are rabbis who were lenient about this. Look at source 16, the next source on page number 4. We have Rav Moshe. Why does Rav Moshe say it's problematic to hug your sister? Because you're going to get used to hugging girls, and then you're going to come to actually come and, I don't know, get into the habit of, and bad things will come of it. It's like a gezeira. V'lechen kevan shu rak midrabanan, gam l'rambam, gam ini shur mitzad hen atzman. It's only drabanan, even according to the Rambam, it's not iser on its own. L'achshiv ze atzma l'mais iser. Ein l'mchor kishinot ha-shelo ya'il, u'motov shiyeh shogigim v'lo mizidim. So therefore, when you see people who hug their sister, or who hug their aunt, right? Should we protest? No. Why not? Better not to mutav shiyesho. Better that people shouldn't know about it than and be doing it unwittingly. It's not absolutely usher than doing it purposefully. Okay. Avalu rak lachoto v'achot imo v'udin lachot aviv debekula leka taiva v'nami tefilatam shalom shekin esedola. Your aunt is not considered an arayos, that it'll be completely usur, and therefore for them you would not have to dissuade people away from hugging them. It would still be something we look down upon according to Shulchan Aruch or Moshe, but not something that you have to warn people against, as opposed to your cousin, where it would seem like you would actually have to warn people not to do this, says their Moshe. Okay? Now, I have to, let's take it a step further. There are rabbis, especially in the more YU world and less the yeshivish world, but lav dafka, who are willing to even be more lenient about this issue. I've heard from my rebbe in the YU world. Rav Willig, I think, talks about it. Certainly in extenuating situations, like if your aunt will be really embarrassed by it, and you know your whole life you grew up hugging your sister or whatever, there are definitely poskim that are willing to be more lenient. Because they say that the Rambam says he didn't think it's good, he doesn't like it, but he doesn't view it as an absolute yisur, and therefore you would be allowed to do that. And the truth is, I personally know rabbis who hug their sister. So sister, I think, is very different than aunt, to be honest. But anyways, there's definitely room for leniency here. You know, if you can be machmir, okay. But if she goes in for the hug, I wouldn't embarrass her, your aunt or your sister. You know, okay, certainly, that's my personal opinion. You should ask your rabbi what you think. Yeah?
So I don't have the source sheet in front of me. Do both Shulchan Aruch and Rambam use the same language of kind of not really aser, of a g'nai, or is that...
G'nai, although we'd have to compare them to the Shulchan Aruch does say, v'divar asur, which, v'divar yisur. Which I don't think is the language of the Rambam, which I don't think I brought here. I'm not sure. I don't remember. And it's debatable if the Shulchan Aruch believes it to be a real issue or just to be something not good. Yeah. Okay. Let's keep moving on. What about an adopted father or a stepfather or something like that? Let's say you're an adopted father. You have a daughter, but biologically you're not daughter. So therefore, halachically, there would be all sorts of issues, theoretically, yichud and negiya and all these things. But I raised her, I can't touch my own daughter. Like, that's a pretty crazy situation. Therefore, again, there's a whole shiur in of itself. You can look in YU has a journal, it has a whole article I read about it. Basically, there are rabbis who are lenient about adopted parents and allow, they say there's no feelings there, and you can be lenient about a lot of these issues. And there are those who are machmir, like in any issue, but there's a lot of mainstream posting more.
Only if you raise them from like when they're like babies.
In general, right. If you raise them when they're older, it would probably be a harder case to make that there's no possible feelings that could have emerged. Okay. Moving on. And one final story. Oh, okay, this is fascinating. What about homosexuals? What about, would Nigia apply if I... in touching my homosexual boyfriend, would that be a problem? Yeah. So I am not at all an expert on this issue. I really don't know. I think I haven't looked into it enough, but I can definitely imagine some poskim being machmir. I think there are poskim that are machmir. They say that it'll lead you to things that are usher and therefore it's forbidden. And I could definitely imagine that there are poskim are lenient to say that Xavier wouldn't apply to that type of scenario. I haven't done enough research to really have an opinion on it, but I'm just. What I've heard is that it's a sugya, which is fascinating. But for in terms of girls, it would probably be less of an issue because homosexual and girls, certain things are more lenient than only it might be Issa Durbana, not Issa Durbana, if that relation is together. So It's a whole topic in of itself. But yeah, question?
So you have a question. So is it Osir to drive overall in the same car? Is it one?
Great question. Or, great question.
If you open the window, I don't know if that's ever.
There are those who are machmir about Euclid in a car.
In front seat, back seat.
Yeah, there are those who are machmir about in a car. Certainly if you're on like a back road in a country road and there's no one else around. There are those who are machmir, and there are those who are lenient, certainly in a normal, like, city situation where you can easily get out, that it wouldn't apply.
Got it.
And there's, you know, in between situations are unclear.
Like the aunt's nephew situation could be a little complicated. She, like, you know, to drive.
Right. Nachon. My aunt used to take me to school every day, but I was 10. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if that's a good question if you could apply equally to your aunt and to your sister. It's fascinating. Good question. Okay, just want to cover a lot of ground today. Seder. Finally, there's the general, like, the meta issue, which is the bigger issue, which is in terms of how do we relate to girls in general, beyond just touching. How do we relate to the other gender in the modern world? So certainly, traditionally, halacha was very strict about gender differentiation, and in many communities, many halachic communities, that's still absolutely the norm. For example, look in the Shulchan Aruch, Ibn Ezra. A person has to be very, very far from women. It's also to wink at one of the someone who's sexually forbidden to you. I remember they used to have that game, what's it called, drug dealer? We have to like wink at the other person. So I remember when I was in Machach, like I wouldn't play the game because I was afraid I'd have to wink at the girl and wouldn't see. Later I heard that there were some leniencies. I can't play with her. You can't stare at her. Even to smell her. You can't look at them while they're washing the wash. You can't even look at the clothing when it's not on her. If you're staring at a woman for sexual pleasure, it's like you're staring at her private parts. And on. Okay, we've talked about this source before. Clearly on the machmir side, we can understand, you know, that it's trying to tell us to distance ourselves from women. Yeah, good question.
Is it shomer yiyah for a guy, shomer yiyah for a girl, or total shomer yiyah?
It's a very good question. It seems to be the obligation would be on the man to not touch a nida.
Right.
However, I would probably assume that a woman would have an obligation of low teeth, like to make sure the neighbor, not to allow a guy to pee in that situation.
So the girl are technically.
Technically, but they are by touching the guy, you're making him sin. So, right, we'll step back into that 1 second. But let's just to sum up basically. So there's a classic perspective, which certainly has a lot to teach us. But on the other hand, there are rabbis like Shaul Yisraeli who allowed, for example, women and men in the Knesset to interact and talk. And he said that only in the olden days you could assume that if men and women were talking, it was for some preetus. But nowadays, it's a different world. And women, men and women can talk, and it's not necessarily for sexual licentiousness. And therefore, there's no problem for men and women, for Torah, for holy purposes, for Knesset, for serious purposes, for them to interact with each other. And that's pretty much the camp I'm in, that it's fine to have a relationship of, hi, how are you, and to talk about important things with the other gender. But at the same time, I think, you know, we do have to draw the... Certainly when you're married, this becomes even more important that you do have to draw lines about what relations are appropriate or not. And in general, the halacha definitely, I think, dissuades flirting for its own sake, unless you're in the context of a relationship for the sake of marriage. But that also is a whole topic in of itself that I'm just trying to sum up. So that's... related to the Nigiyah issue. Okay, let's step 1 step back into premarital relations because there are really 2 connected issues. Okay, we're working on the assumption that it's usher to touch this woman because she is a nida. But wait a second, is she necessarily a nida? Wouldn't there be a way for her not to be a nida? if she went to a mikvah. If she went to a mikvah, then she would not be a nida, just like a married woman is not a nida. Right? And therefore, there have been those who have suggested, and maybe we should just have women go to a nida, a mikvah, and that would therefore get rid of the problem of negiyah, and maybe it would even get rid of the problem of premarital relations. That's, some have suggested this type of idea, right? Maybe you've heard of it. Now, let's go step back a little bit. The Torah itself is not clear about the Isser of premarital relations, but there are many rabbis who believe that it is an Isser deraita. The Rambam in Hilchos Isserivia, exactly, or Ishus, it might be Ishus.
The first part
of Isserivia. Okay, good. So the Rambam writes that there's an Isser to have premarital relations. Why? Doesn't matter. Nida, not Nida, doesn't matter.
How did that be deraita though? This isn't B.O.R. Shana, wasn't that a thing before?
Okay, but what does Rambam say? Watch this. He says, it says you can't be a prostitute. And how do you define a prostitute? Someone who you're... that would normally be the way we define it, but the Rambam says anyone who you're having relations with when you're not married is, by definition, a zona. And therefore, premarital relations is
awesome. He says schar in the language. I actually have.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it could be in Ishus. He says it a little differently.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says, what are you talking about, Ramban? It's actually like a big machlok. The Ramban says, we have a concept of a pilegesh. Pilegesh is an unmarried woman. And kings used to do that. So there's no, that it's not an Isher Derabanan, this is the Ramban, it's an Isher Derabanan. So Isher Derabanan from the rabbis, we'll have to talk where that comes from. He still thinks it's usher to have premarital relations, but not from that pasuk about the kadesha, about the prostitute. A prostitute is someone who's set aside, who normally has relations with random people, not just any girl, you know, that you're not married to. Yes.
What's the Torah source for having premarital relations?
That's what we're talking about. I'm saying.
Not the Rambam, though. What's like the?
So the Rambam wants to say that the source is not non-prostitution.
Oh, okay.
If you don't go like the Rambam. There is no Torah source.
No, the Rambam says it's Isser Aseh. Doesn't make sense.
The Rambam.
Rambam.
But Nachmanides.
Maimonides.
Yeah, Maimonides says it's Isser Aseh. But Nachmanides says it's not. He says it's Isser Drabah. Okay? Now where does he get it from? Oh, yeah?
According to the Ramban, is the Isser for a Pilegesh, for everyone, is that a Derabanan, or is it for just a king,
Derabanan? It's also Derabanan for everyone, but it's Mutar for a king.
Okay.
Again, Pelagesh is someone you're in a relationship with, but you're not married to her. Which we see many times in Tanakh that happens. So that's the big discussion there. It's very fascinating. One of the first sukkahs I learned in Smicha, actually. It took like a month. It's really fascinating. Yeah.
And how did Ramban classify the prohibition of being a prostitute?
Oh, very good. So where does he get that from? Good, that's the next question. So it could be, some suggest that the Ramban is also very, very famous for another Isser that he talks about, the Isser of the Kedoshim to you. Right? He says you have to be holy, which means that there's some things which might be technically permitted, but the Torah says it's not in the ethics, it's not in the spirit of the Torah. And so some suggest that the Ramban might categorize premarital relations as not being holy, which is therefore deraita. There are others that say that it's not an isser deraita, it's an isser derabanan. Okay, now where would the isser derabanan come from to have premarital relations? Where would we get this idea that it's an isser derabanan?
Takana.
Okay, so it's a tricky question, it's a takana, but what takana do we know about that's very, very famous?
You actually.
No, not Rabbeinu Gershon, it's the Rivash who talks about the Takana. We'll talk about it in a second, but the Rivash cites the fact that of Yichud, just what you were talking about. We know that from the time of David and Shlomo, the Gemara says we have an Isser of Yichud. You're not allowed to be alone with a woman. Wait a second, why can't I be alone with another woman? What are we worried about? Because you might come to have relations. Now the Isser of Yichud is with a married woman and not with a non-married woman. It doesn't matter if she's neither or not neither. Right? Seemingly. Therefore, it would seem that the rabbis, if they're prohibiting you to be in the same room with a girl, kal v'chaymer, obviously it's not permitted to have relations with this girl. That's one gemara. There's another gemara which also seems to be pretty explicit, where it says that there's an iser derabanan of sleeping with a non-married woman. under what category is unclear, but certainly the rabbis looked negatively upon this. Okay? Question? Yeah.
Does Yichud not apply to a married woman?
Yichud does apply. You're not allowed to be in the same room as a married woman unless the husband is around town, unless he's close.
What if both the married woman and the man are like
still a problem?
Different.
Like they both have their wives around. Technically, it would be okay. Okay. When I was dating, my wife and I, not yet wife and I, would always have a Yichud guy, and he would just like his job was to randomly be around to randomly knock on the door that when we were on a date, therefore it wouldn't be a Yichud problem. And one time he did it at the wrong time. Like, we were like, whatever. Nothing bad was happening. It was just a very awkward date that he had pizza with him. Anyway, that's just we're off top. Yeah.
So take this to like an absurd theoretical. If you were not doing the Kal Chomer, just like, how is it practically possible to have sex if you're not having Yichud? Like, how do you get there? So if you were to have sex in the non-Yichud
in a public area.
Right, to keep like
absurd. Okay, but the point is not that. The point is that there are those who claim, where do I see there's an issue? I don't see any issue to have relations. But the argument is, the rabbis said you can't have yichud, so obviously they also didn't think it was okay to have relations.
Right. And I've also heard, like, through the monodox grapevine, that it's less bad with a goy,
right, okay, so say that. We'll get to that one second. I just want to sum it all. Because the rabbi who's famous for this takana is called the Rivash. He lived in Barcelona in the 1300s. I printed it out, the whole tshuva of the Rivash, if anyone's interested to see it. You can see it inside. Looking through it today. Basically, he goes through all these sources that we've been mentioning and makes it extremely clear that he believes that the rabbis forbade having relations with a girl. And he takes it a step further, and he says, therefore, a woman cannot go to the mikvah when she's not married. Okay? And that was the takana of the Rivash. Something like Lifnei Iver. In other words, why would the girl be going to the mikvah if she's not married? The only reason which she'd be going, most likely, is to have relations with this guy. Or maybe to go harvest, or maybe on Yom Kippur there used to be a custom for girls to purify themselves. But in any case, the Rivash makes this takana, which was adopted by the Jewish community in general, that women are not supposed to go to the mikvah before they're married because we don't want to encourage them to have premarital relations. Okay? Technically, non-Jews would not have a nida issue, but they were included in the general gezerah, just like by Yichud. There's an iser with them and Igiya, they were included in that gezerah. Sorry, I don't have. Okay. Let's just tackle one more issue. We'll have to do sports another time. Nowadays, there are women and there are many moderns who are getting married later. And they want to say that we want to go to a mikvah even if we're not married, okay? And the question is, what's the pro, what's the con, okay? So recently, the head chief rabbi of Israel, Yonah Metzger, made a takana, not really a takana, he's just strengthening the takana, that mikvah ladies have to be very strict to not let single women into the mikvah. And they have to check them. And there's a lot of outrage and a lot of articles written and a lot of, you know, anger in the community. But Rav Metzger's argument was pretty simple. What was his rationale?
The kind of was already made a long time ago by the Rivash.
By the Rivash. This has been accepted by the Jewish community. And we don't want single women having premarital relations. And therefore, we're not going to encourage them to do that. We're going to do everything we can to dissuade that from being part of our culture. On the flip side, there are people, even some rabbis, who have argued against this. So why? What would be the rationale? Whereas if you sleep with them when you're not going to mikvah, is it the right of karis? It's a very, very serious issue to sleep with anida. And then, so we hear both sides, okay? Metzger's side and saying we got to be machmir, no way, premarital religion is against the ethic of the Torah. And the flip side is they're going to do it anyway. Why not? Why pry into their business? Why get involved? You know, let them do what they do. The truth is, if a woman really wanted to go to the mikvah, she could go to an ocean, she could go to a natural way of doing it without going to the mikvah. But just letting you know, that's one of the burning issues in Israeli society. I hear both sides of the equation. I think it's also very different when you're a rabbi. Thank God people don't really come up with these types of shilas. But if you're a rabbi and someone comes to you with an individual shila about these sexual issues, I think there's a lot more compassion and a lot more reason for leniency. But when you're giving a more broad spectrum type of thing, I think it's different. On that note, I think also regarding nigiya and sex, premarital relations, meaning technically halachically, this is this or that this or this. It's very simple sugya. But in terms of the real world we live in, I think we have to really distinguish between, they're not the same thing, and people throw them together. And I think ethically, I think a very strong case could be made that the Torah believes in one man and one woman from the beginning of creation being together, and to have premarital relations really can mess that dynamic up. And so to have go all the way, I especially if it's not in the context of relationship, especially if it's just in the context of hooking up or whatever, I think it's not just halachically us, or I think it's ethically totally against what we believe in. Whereas Nagia, I can't argue with the sources. The sources are that it's usher, so I'm not going to say otherwise, but I do think that it's different. Holding your girlfriend that you've been dating 10 after 3 years is very different than, than other things. And just because a person might not be doing A doesn't mean he should throw everything out. It's all one big, it's all the same thing. I think there are different things. Yeah. So that's what I think about Nigia, premarital relations, a regular chat. Any questions? Yeah.
Is Kari also for a handshake that's considered Derech Yiva, or like a tap on the back for Derech Yiva? Because it's Lotzikir Vu, it's Lotzikir Vu.
It's a good question. There are those who argue that, I've seen the argument that it's not. The Rambam says Lotzikir Vu is a different Isser, and therefore it's not Kari, so it's still the Asar Derevana. For Nida, that's a really good question. I'm not sure. It's a good question. I'm not sure. Don't know. Seder. All right, guys. This is a sensitive topic, but I hope we...